outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Backyard Barbecuer.
Mr. Backyard Barbecuer.
You've never once helped a little lady in the kitchen. You've never assisted her with the grocery shopping. But for some reason, when it comes to grilling slabs of flesh over an open fire, it's suddenly a man's job.
You love to handle your meat.
You know precisely how long it takes to cook every variety of meat. A steak, one beer. Brisket, three. An entire suckling pig. Can you say cake?
You're both getting marinated.
When the meat is fully cooked, you're half baked.
Try not to pass out in the fire. Yeah.
So the next time you're wiping barbecue sauce off every one of your appendages, be sure to thank the guy in the Kiss the Cook apron, passed out in the chaise lounge. Mr. Backyard Barbecuer, a real American hero. Don't look now, I think the deck is on fire.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday, May 12th. We're live in the studio. We have a flakeout alert.
Flakeout? I've actually got a few of them.
Really?
Well, I mean, I think, well, some of it was my fault. There was a little bit of a miscommunication with some of the scheduling. But no, I mean, I'm having meetings with people and people are just like, three rescheduling later.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, do you want to do this?
Yeah, do you want to come in?
And I'm talking about other stuff, not even radio stuff. I'm talking like... Come on, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I got a lot of time on my hands, but still, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to put more into this relationship than you are.
Yeah. I don't understand. I think it's when someone doesn't respect your time, they don't respect themselves either. That's the way I look at it, you know? And, I mean, if I was invited anywhere, especially a radio station, man, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night, you know? I'd be really excited.
Well, you know, I'm just... I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. So how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing really good. Yeah. I got a new shampoo. Can you tell my hair looks good?
Yeah, it does look good
pretty?
Today. Yeah. Yesterday you didn't do anything about it. You put it under a hat.
Yeah, I had it under a hat.
Yeah.
But no, I got a new shampoo for all of you guys listening and wanting to know deep thoughts about my life.
Do we want to know what kind it is?
Well, okay, let's be honest. I had a little bit of a buildup issue.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what that means?
Yeah, when the shampoo builds up in your hair.
Build up, and then also I've had like this chronic itchy scalp, which just sounds nasty, but and it is. It just kind of is just like this itchy scalp, and it apparently if your scalp is not healthy, your hair eventually will like kind of break off and it'll be thinner and it just isn't good for your hair.
Yeah.
And I've got kind of a big head of hair generally, but I've noticed that over the couple of years it's just kind of been not as great. And so I was reading on it, and so I found this great shampoo, and it's to kind of medicate the scalp and kind of, so anyway, it feels really bouncy and girly.
Good.
Yep. It's
well,
called T-Sal.
You're happy.
It's Neutrogena T-Sal.
Yeah, so it did the job.
Uh-huh.
Good.
I love it every time I go to the shower.
So is your hair now thinner and or
thicker.
Softer?
It's thicker.
It's thicker, but softer.
It's thicker, softer, more pretty. See, look at that. Doesn't it look good?
Yeah, it looks very
fluffy.
Good. Yeah.
Freaking fluff head.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I'm grateful about that.
Do you have to curl your hair in the morning?
My hair is actually naturally curly.
Mm-hmm.
It's very curly, actually. So I only use a curling iron to kind of smooth it out and make it a little bit straighter in some parts so it's not all curls.
I see. Okay.
So I don't
so
really
the curls
use it.
Are natural.
Yeah, I don't really use it to give it curl. I use it more to kind of give it
more
of
it
a
out.
Wave,
yeah.
Smooth it out so I don't look like Shirley Temple.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, because it's really curly.
Yeah. I saw my daughter last night.
And, oh, really?
She's got a full head of curly hair.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, it's so friggin' curly, like you wouldn't believe it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but people love it, you know?
Is it like tight curls or like big curls? Or?
No, tight curls.
Yeah?
Well, I don't know.
Does her hair kind of look almost like a fro? You know how it gets so curly that it froze out?
Almost, yeah.
Almost?
Yeah.
Is it long or short?
Long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but she looks so cute with it, you know?
Oh, that's sweet. So she's got curly hair. It's just big hair, huh?
Right, yeah. And, you know, so I'm finding out new things about my daughter because we haven't been that close lately.
Is she telling you but stuff you don't want to hear?
No, not necessarily that. But no, just different things, you know, that I didn't know about everyday stuff.
What did she tell you?
Well, you know, I mean, some personal things and stuff, you know.
Okay.
But for the most part, no, she was just, I mean, to find out that she's happy with her hair and all that, you know, it's a revelation.
Oh, did she used to not like her hair?
No, I don't know. You know, some people have curly hair and they don't like it, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, but she loves it. She embraces it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So what did you guys do last night?
We went to dinner. We went to P.F. Chang last night.
Oh,
which
really?
Is a great Chinese restaurant.
Yeah. So how does it work? Does she call you up, Dad, I want to go to dinner? Or does she...
No, we invited them because of my birthday.
Oh, that's cool.
She came, you know? I mean...
Well, you're her dad.
Yeah.
You didn't beat her, right?
I know, but no. But there was some time when, you know, when things were strained and stuff.
Oh,
know?
Okay. Yeah, anytime there's a divorce and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It kind of weirds it out a bit.
It really does, you know? I mean, they get their head filled with bullshit.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, when they grow older and stuff, they start to realize
that
things are different.
And she's what, 19, 20?
She's going to be 20 next month, yeah.
So she's going to be, is she going to be going to the birthplace, birthright?
Yeah, she is going on it in June.
Oh, and she is.
I may be going too.
That's so awesome.
I know.
Wow, so she's definitely going.
She's definitely going.
So how do you do that? Yeah. You just apply or what do?
You apply and you have to qualify. I don't know. There's obviously probably thousands or tens of thousands of people applying for it. What Birthright is a trip to Israel that the government arranges.
Okay.
So to try and attract immigrants and things like that to Israel.
Why do they want immigrants there?
Because that's the power is in numbers, you know.
Oh,
and
it is.
And what happens to the population there? There's so many Arabs there that you know, they could be the majority eventually there, and that's not a good thing.
Oh, so it's more like they're trying to build up their race.
The population.
The population of the race, because you said
not race.
Oh, okay. Well, because you said there's a lot of Arabs, so
right. But it's not about race. It's about the fact that Arabs want to kill us all. You know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it like, so I don't really know a lot about, so what's going on over there? I mean, it's just constant, is it really constant bombing or is it more played up
in
the
really
media?
It's really complicated, but the media does, you know.
Played up?
Yeah, they really do, you know.
I met a girl here who, it was a few years ago, like 2 years ago. Was there some pretty bad bombings 2 years ago? Like,
there's always bombings,
but there's like where the people were really fleeing.
Right.
I remember she said she moved here twice to stay with family because they had like shut down parts of Israel and there was just like some major bombing, and she escaped. And just a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know the whole.
It's not about escaping. I mean, you don't really feel there that, you know, it's like wartime and stuff. There are things, you know, and they do suicide bombings and stuff, you know, in the middle of Israel. And I mean, there was a bombing a few years ago where they bombed a bus, and then when the ambulances and stuff came and to pick up the remains, another bomb went off and killed all of these people too. You know, so all the help crew, they all got blown away as well. So it's very cruel, you know, it's very ruthless there, and it doesn't matter what the Israelis try to do. The Arabs just won't recognize Israel's right to exist. So that's a major problem.
And so is it all about, and I'm asking kind of like your basic questions because I really don't know that much about this, what's actually going on. I mean, you hear bombings, you know, people are warring against each other. I mean, and that goes on all over the world.
Right.
But is this all about who wants to have like Jerusalem or Israel or...
It's about everything, yeah, but...
It's like, who wants that actual land? Is it fighting over land? Or?
It's not about land. That's what they make it appear as, but it's not about land. No, it's about the fact that they hate Jews and they don't want them in their midst, you know? And it's very tough because all your neighbors around you want to annihilate you, you know? And that's a tough place to be in. So Israel is in constant state of war. But nevertheless, life there is amazing. You know,
that's what I hear. And I've heard what you're saying, that it's not an everyday experience where you're running for your life. There's just these... But at the same time, there is that, you know...
Yeah, there is that fear all the time.
Because it does happen. It is
yeah.
real.
And they hit civilians all the time. That's their MO, you know?
Well, isn't it interesting or telling how a society that's being attacked mm-hmm. or periodically, you know, terrorized still goes about their
yeah.
world? They're still,
yeah.
still go- I think that speaks volumes, and it probably pisses off the opponent, right?
Yeah.
When you're just like, okay, tomorrow...
Not only that, but it's a very successful country, you know. Mm. The Palestinians depend a lot on Israel, you know, for jobs.
Oh, yeah.
For assistance, things like that. I mean, can you imagine people are trying to kill you and you assist them, you know, in their lives and stuff? But that's what happens there, you know.
What do you mean?
Israel does assist, you know, and they provide resources for the Palestinians and things like that. You know, I mean, it's not friendly, but at the same time... it's not like Israel goes there to kill people. You know, it's not what it's about.
So hold on. We've got Palestine. Is that a place or is...
It's not. They call it Palestine, but there's no such place.
There isn't a place?
No.
Okay.
Israel used to be called Palestine, but that's before.
So it's Israel. Then where are the Arab people?
They're like in Israel, you know? Like
they're in Israel?
Parts, yeah.
Okay. But are they in
Israel
like
now.
The...
Like the West Bank and Gaza and...
Okay, which is Israel.
East Jerusalem, yeah.
Okay, so do these Arab people have like their own country too, or no?
No,
or?
They don't. They want their own country because no other Arab country is going to take them. You know, they've been kicked out of so many countries.
Oh, so this isn't just... Okay, so I'm really sorry for listeners that I sound so incredibly ignorant.
Why? I mean, we're taking a lesson in the Middle East.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to... I know for some people this is like they know this. So I guess my question...
Most people do not, believe me.
Well, I think you're right too, but I just say that because I want to... You know, be part of it. So, okay, so you've got what are the neighboring countries? You have what is it, Jordan or Lebanon?
Jordan and Egypt and Lebanon and
then
Syria.
And Syria.
And you have Iraq also, which
okay.
is it's not neighboring, but it's within
right
range.
Okay, and all of these are well, Iraq is considered a Persian country, right?
No, it's an Arab.
It's
country.
It's a Arab country. So Iran is a Persian country.
Right.
Okay, so Iraq is an Arab country, and then the other countries that you said, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt, are those considered Arab countries?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So then...
So Israel is surrounded...
By Arab countries.
Right.
Okay.
And their dream has always been to push the Israelis to the sea, you know, because on one side there's the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. There's no country there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with these Arabs... You're saying, okay, so these are the surrounding countries, but within Israel, there's Arabs that are terrorists.
Right.
And they're living there.
Right.
And you're saying the other countries won't take them back.
Right.
Why won't their countries take them back?
I don't know. Nobody wants them.
So they terrorize their own country too?
No. They go where it's easy. It's easy to terrorize the Israelis because then everybody's behind them, you know? All the Arab countries. I mean,
so are they illegal? Are they essentially illegal immigrants or?
No, they just live there. You know, I mean, they have their own areas, but there's many Israeli Arabs as well who are not terrorists. You know, they just sort of like stay there, and they're part of Israel. But then there are the militant Palestinians, Hamas and the PLO, whose interest is to create mayhem all the time. You know, what's interesting right now is I'm reading a book by the son of one of the leaders of Hamas, which is that's like the militant group. You know, all they want really is no, Israel doesn't have a right to exist. They want to annihilate everybody and they won't stop until they've done that. So this guy is the son of one of the leaders and he tells about his story and he ended up converting to Christianity and now wrote a book criticizing his people, you know. And so, yeah, he's probably going to be taken out one day.
Is he still over there?
Because of this book. No, he's here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's no way he could have written the book there and stayed alive.
No.
You know, so it tells you, I mean, there's some
revelation.
What's
the name of the book? Because I think I've heard of it.
The Son of Hamas.
I've heard of this, or did you tell me this before?
Yeah, I told you about
it. Oh, okay.
That. Yeah.
So like one of his father's one of the founders, right?
Exactly.
And he just like pretty much defected.
So he tells about his days being in prison and how they fight amongst themselves. It's just horrendous, you know. I mean, it's a sad situation for the Palestinians, but they don't have good leaders, you know. And like in 2000, you know, Arafat was here and the Israeli prime minister and Bill Clinton. And at that point, Israel was willing to give them everything they wanted, and they still rejected it. And they're never going to have another opportunity like this. And they rejected, not only did they reject it, but they started another intifada, which is the uprising.
So, okay, so going back just to make sure. So we've got Israel, the country.
Right.
And you have Arabs that live in the country, right. Legally. They're legally allowed to be there.
Yeah.
Okay, but they don't want to coexist in that country with Israelis.
No.
Is that right?
They don't want to coexist. You know, I mean, they have their own land, too. They don't want to coexist in that way, either. It's not like they're willing to take only parts. They want everything.
That's what I'm asking. So they're saying they live in certain regions, and right. They're saying we want all of you guys out.
Right.
And we want to take over.
Right. That's
the
what they
whole
want.
Country.
They'll stop at nothing less than that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So how do you resolve a problem like that?
Mm.
You know, that's why when they talk about the Middle East, it's a very complicated situation because there's a lot of past and history between these people.
Now, when you were growing up there, what mm-hmm. do you remember or have experienced?
I remember two wars, you know, the Six-Day War in 67, and then there was the Yom Kippur War in 1973. And I remember those because I was young, you know.
What was
the first one, I was 7 years old. The second one, I was 13, you know.
What was that like?
It was pretty scary, you know. I mean, we'd go into the bomb shelters. Every building has a bomb shelter underneath. And that's what you do, you know. But kids make fun of it, you know. I mean, they make the best
of it.
Yeah,
well, kids are, yeah.
Yeah, because we get to be together. We mm-hmm. don't go to school, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, so it's cool. But at the same time, I mean, there's a certain pride there in Israel, you know, in the military might. Because it's required, you know. I mean, Israel, like, by necessity has to be the best military. Or
which they're known to be one of the best,
to exist.
Right?
Yeah. But by necessity, you know, it's mm-hmm. not like we're special or anything, but what do? You know, when everybody wants to kill you, you've got to be the best.
Mm.
You've got to be the strongest, you know.
And everybody there goes and serves in the military.
Yeah.
At what age? Like 18?
18, yeah. For 3 years.
For 3 years.
Right. Women only go for two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And women, they don't do frontline type
they
stuff.
They don't do combat, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, but you never served there because you were...
I was young. I came here when I was 16. So
yeah,
I never
so you
reached
didn't...
that age. And then
yeah.
when I got too old, they don't really want me. There's nothing to do with me.
Sounds like, hey, I'm turned 50 this week. What's up? I'm ready to rock it. Let's
yeah.
do this.
You know, but that's the sad thing is we send out our kids, you know, 18-year-olds and stuff, you know. But that's because they're in great shape, you know. I mean, soldiers have to be young.
And some people, do they make a military career out of it?
I mean,
you can't. So you can continue to serve.
Many
of
them do. And that guarantees you a good career in your civilian life once you leave.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you can't even get a job if you haven't been to the army there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, people are going to look at it and go, why didn't you serve, you know? It's sort of a, you know, a duty, a privilege.
But you can't not serve, right? Is
right.
it legal?
Yeah. No, it's not legal not to serve.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how does that work then in Israel? And then you have the Arab regions of Israel. Are they required to serve too?
No.
They're not, but I thought they're Israel.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they're not Israeli citizens, you know?
That's my question.
Yeah.
That was my question.
There are some non-Jews, though, like Druze and stuff, which are like tribes
mm-hmm.
of Arabs and that. So
yeah.
They're more forthcoming and stuff. So many of them do enlist. You know?
Well, I guess my question is
but not Palestinians. You're not gonna.
Well, I thought. I guess is it a governmental mandate within a country, or mm-hmm. certain regions are exempt, or nationalities are exempt?
Well, look, the thing is this: before 1967, there was Israel the way it was divided by the UN in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happened is the Arabs didn't like the fact that the land was partitioned. So the day that Israel declared its independence, about 7 Arab countries attacked, you know, and Israel didn't have a military to speak of or anything, you know, no infrastructure yet to speak of, and yet the Israelis were able to defeat the Arabs. So then there was the land that was, you know, given in 1948, and then in 1967 in the Six-Day War, Israel took a lot of lands. And then they became known as the occupied territories. And that's where the Palestinians are. So it's part of Israel, but it's formerly their land. And, you know, but there was a reason for taking all this is because there were strategic points where they would shoot at us and it was pretty dangerous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to be pushed back. And now, so now it's not about giving that land back only, because they were offered all of it back, but they didn't want it. They want everything that Israel was since 1948, you know. So it's not going to happen.
Why do they, I mean, I'm just curious, why do they feel entitled to that land?
Because of history.
History, that's what I'm asking. I don't understand the
history. Besides, where else are Jews going to go? I mean, there's a lot of heritage, a lot of history there. It's
well, I
their
understand
land,
the Jewish
you know,
aspect.
They
I don't understand
use the Bible, you know, that to show that the Jewish people were promised that land and so forth. And there's just a lot of roots there. I mean, there's been Jews there all along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for many years. And then, you know, after World War II and the Holocaust, they had to be an answer for the Jews, you know. And where mm-hmm. would you send them? Where would you put them, you know? So this was the most natural place to put this. And what happened is there wasn't any country there, you know. I mean, there was a Turkish mandate and then there was a British mandate in World War I. And the British were in charge there until 1947, 1948.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it was the United Nations, you know, with many countries voting for the Jewish people having land in Israel, you know, able to build a nation. So, you know, I mean, look, that's my point of view. You might talk to a Palestinian, you'll hear something else. But note that I'm not really bad-mouthing them. I'm not cursing them. I'm not that. Because, you see, Israelis do not have the hatred that they have towards us. You know, in Israel, it's not about hatred. It's about just defending yourself. You know, and your existence.
Yeah.
And they, by definition, by design, target civilians and children and women.
Yeah, I just don't understand why they're so... I mean, I guess you can't ever really understand hate, but I'm trying to understand why they have animosity other than...
Let me tell you why I think, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Because Muslims will not stand for Jews ruling over them. That's why.
Are you guys ruling over them?
Well, in Israel, yeah.
Yeah, well, you're establishing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and now Israel is in charge of that land, and they're not happy with it, you know. So, like I said, it's a one-sided hatred, and that's why there's no solution for it. Because how do you sit down with someone who hates you so much and discuss anything, you know?
Well, I guess my next question is, you know, and I don't know, neither one of us is Muslim, right? So this is, you know, kind of questioning and, you know, with respect to the religion, and I know that not everyone in the religion is
militant.
Some of them are very peace-loving and they take the principles, but they're not out to annihilate people. I get it.
Right.
But I guess what I'm asking, and I've read a few books on it, is how do they believe, is it just a Islam versus Judaism, like, or Muslim versus Jews, or is it anybody that's
Arab against Israeli?
Yeah, or is it just, you know, anybody that is an infidel done?
Right. That's why they have America in their sights as well.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess everybody that doesn't live in their way of life is an enemy. And that's why you have all these Islamic militants all over the world doing this shit, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting how it kind of boils down to
Know? Look at countries like Pakistan and Malaysia and stuff. I mean, what the hell do they care about Israel? But they hate it just as much.
They do?
Yeah, because it's in the Quran, whatever, you know? So,
that's crazy, man.
Yeah, so the Muslims have to rule over everyone, and it's just not happening.
So, but you're just saying, despite all this, you guys have a very strong military, and there's a very prosperous country.
Prosperous country. Mm-hmm. A lot of brain power there and stuff. You know,
but
I mean,
the economy,
a lot of high tech.
I've met some Jews out here that have yet to transition to Israel because they said the economy's not the same as the U.S. and that they don't make the same.
Well, no, it's different.
Yeah.
It's different, you know, but at the same time, it's a democratic country. It's capitalistic. So, I mean, when you go there, you'd think you're like in a... some state of the United States, if you go like into Tel Aviv and stuff. It's only when you go outside, you start seeing history.
Like, I'm not going to lie, Jewish men are kind of hot.
Are they?
I've met a few of them out here. They're kind of hot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah was saying, my roommate was saying about, she says she notices like Jewish men are very respectful, respectful towards women. It's kind of in their culture.
Right.
You can notice that. You notice a lot about different cultures and stuff even in LA. Mm-hmm. Like people that are kind of really connected still to their culture or their their country. And maybe they may be American still, but there's you can see if they've been brought up in certain cultures, how they treat women.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, not only that, you know, but many Jews are very successful because they're driven by their parents, by society, and things like this. And then people get jealous, you know, and that creates a lot of problems. That creates anti-Semitism, you know, because Jews do tend to stand out, you know, because we're such a small number of people yet make a lot of impact.
Yeah.
You know.
So crazy, though.
Yeah, I know.
It's just madness. I mean, it just makes me think about heaven and hell and, like, how this world is just, you know, I love living here, don't get me wrong. I mean, life is great, but you just go, it's a, from the beginning of time that we know, I mean, there's just certain things that have always been there. Poverty's always been there. Mm-hmm. Wars have always been there. A lot of good things have been there too, but it's just kind of like, I just don't ever, I mean, you can manage it for a while. Maybe in our lifetime, we'll see some peace for a while or it'll be managed, but it never really goes away.
Right.
You know, it'll crop up in another place or whatever. And it's just part of our fallen nature, I think, is the human race. And but it just it's just when you hear these stories of just this non-negotiable kind of hatred where you can't meet each other in the middle, I mean, I mean but at the same time it is kind of a it's kind of heartening or sad because you know what I'm trying to say, how it's just the root of it is just so deep. And
yeah, I mean, these are ancient hatreds, you know? It's not new.
Yeah, isn't that kind of fascinating how ancient that goes back and how it's bred into people, how they're taught? I mean, it's the same thing when you live in the South, not just the South, but anywhere. It's people teach their kids certain things like racism, and they're brought up to believe that they're different and that these people that are different are bad, and or just a culture of being different is wrong. I mean, I experienced it in its own way where I lived. I mean... Mm. It's not like as segregated as it was obviously years ago, but there's I don't really know if it's about the black or the white or the different religions or if it's really about you look different than me. I just think some people are afraid and they want to alienate, isolate and destroy people, and it's like a heart issue. It goes so deep.
Exactly.
And they're just gonna find what it happens
and
to be race.
It's pride, you know.
Yeah,
there's
pride.
A lot of pride too, you know.
Pride,
which can get you in trouble.
Yeah, it's like somebody's got to be special and win here. So it's going to be our religion or our nationality or our, you know, whatever. It's like we're going to be the rulers, and so we're going to hate it. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. You see, if they just try to make peace, I mean, they would thrive, you know. They would really flourish and thrive. But they don't get it. They don't get it. You know, they raise their kids hating the Jews.
Okay.
Putting toy guns in their hands when they're like, you know, too young to understand. And you can imagine when you raise kids like that, what's going to happen? You know, what's going to become of them?
It's just like in other parts of the country where they teach kids to kill their parents, and they just make this army of kids that are shooters.
I know. It's very sad, man. It's terrible, you know.
So, but you're going back.
Yeah.
In June,
well,
right?
I'm going back for a trip. Yeah, so I can spend some time with my daughter. I can show her where I grew up and stuff, you know.
So you guys are going to go together?
No, she's going separately. I'll follow, and then when she's done with her trip,
you'll show up, and then you guys will hang out.
Yeah. But I'll have some time to spend with my family and.
Oh, that's so cool. And you said you haven't been back in a long time, right?
Well, actually, only about a couple years.
Oh, okay.
No, wait a minute. I was there last year.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I was there last year.
And when you go, how long do you go for? Because is it a long flight?
Like 10 days.
Okay.
It is a long flight.
It is?
Yeah. Oh, man. It's such a long flight, you know? I mean, when you fly direct, it's about 14, 15 hours.
Are you serious?
And if there's a stop, then it can take you up to 20 hours, you know, to get there.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, that's one reason why I don't like going there, you know?
Do you want to fly direct to such a long distance? Or do you
want
to get off?
No, I'm not going to fly direct.
Because you need to get off the plane at some point.
Yeah, you want to take a break, you know?
Yeah. Because usually in the U.S., you're like, oh, direct.
Yeah.
You want to do direct.
But it does save you a couple hours, you know, of having to sit in the airport.
But yeah, that's true. But if you just need, like, a breather.
Yeah.
14 hours on a plane.
14 hours. That's a lot of time, you know. I mean, the time just, you know. I mean, think about it. Even if you get to fall asleep for 5 hours or something, you still have 9 hours to deal with, you know.
That's crazy.
I know. And it's not comfortable in those planes anymore, you know, unless you fly business or first class. It's just like a zoo in there.
Are you going to fly either one of those?
No,
you...
I can't afford that.
Really? How much does that cost?
Yeah.
How much does that cost? Like, from
probably
here
to... $5,000-$6,000 for
really?
For first class, yeah.
Wow.
If not more. Yeah, I mean, coach costs you almost $2,000.
Oh, you know, it's international.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not only that, but it's the high season now, you know. That's why, you know, when the summer starts.
Wow.
Then they raise the prices.
Now, are you and your wife going to go, or is it just you?
No, just me.
Just you? Okay.
Yeah.
And so then you'll make the flight yourself. See, I think I'd have to booze it up a bit, you know.
Yeah.
I'd have to booze it up.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
But it's rewarding once you get there and stuff.
Yeah.
It's really cool. You know, my parents are getting older. I need to see them. I need to visit them a little bit.
That's great.
I know.
So you're so excited?
So it would be a little bit. Like I said, you know, it's these flights that I hate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So getting there is not fun at all. But yeah, once I'm there, I'm cool, you know.
Man.
But it's a culture shock. Even for me, when I go
really?
There, it's a culture shock.
What is the most...
Because people are, like, really aggressive and, you know, pushy.
Like New York aggressive?
Self-centered.
Or
even more.
More than New York?
Yeah. Even more than New York.
Really?
Yeah.
How is that? Like, because I think
New
York...
On the roads when they drive, it's like they don't give a shit about you.
Really?
Yeah. And in many different places. Anyway, we got our author calling. We have an author this morning, so let's get that, and we'll introduce the book in just a second. Good morning. You're on the air with Sam and Kira. Go ahead.
I have come to the line for you.
Whoa, we've got a terrible connection. Can you call us right back?
Yeah. Hold on.
Wonderful. Okay,
like
wow.
From a different planet.
That was a terrible call.
I got a guess.
Wow. Yeah, and she's going to put someone on the line, but wow, there was a terrible connection there.
So this is his people calling? I love that. I love it how people call to connect them. This is pretty cool.
Yes, hi, are you with us?
Yes, I have Tom Ferry on the line for you guys.
Right, thank you so much. Go ahead and put him through.
Hold on one moment.
Thank you. Tom Ferry, and the book is Life by Design.
Hey, Tom, you're on with LA Talk Radio, and it is Sam and Kara on the line.
Great.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Sam. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Well, I've been up since 4:30 talking to all kinds of great people like yourself on the radio. So
oh, boy. You must be tired by now.
I'm about ready for a nap.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we won't keep you long. You know, we just want to briefly talk about your book. You wrote the book Life by Design, 6 Steps to an Extraordinary You. How did the book come about? What gave you the background to actually put a book like this together?
Well, two things. When you read the book, you'll discover that I was probably the most unlikely person to ever write a book like this. I was kicked out of both parents' homes by the time I was 15 and was kicked out of 4 different high schools before I finally found one that matched my style. And the best way to describe it, Sam, is I was just a hellion. And, you know, that gave me a lot of perspective.
Right.
But when I was 18, I got a job as a salesperson, and that led me down the opportunity to get exposed to some of the great, you know, inspirational writers and leaders and sales trainers and motivators.
Right.
And I got to tell you, when I was 18, I just got hooked, and it's been 22 years ever since.
Really? Wow. So you describe yourself as a success coach, personal development. What does a success coach mean? What do you do?
You know, it's a good example. I get the phone call from one of my clients who's an actor, and I got to be sensitive to not saying names, but he's done 45 films. And you're very successful, but as he said, you know, I'm feeling a little uninspired. I'm not getting as many jobs as I used to get. I'm getting older, and I'm trying to figure out what I want to do now.
Right.
And he was referred to me by another client, and we spent a little time trying to figure out what does he want to do now? What's the vision for his life? What's the purpose for his life? So someone like myself, I usually don't get the phone call, Sam, when someone says, I'm at the top of the world, and I'm doing fantastic. I used to be at the top of the world, I'm sliding downhill fast. What do I do?
I see.
And my job is to help them get back on track, refocused, and back to their goals.
I see. Well, that sounds pretty interesting. I mean, I would love to have something like that, but I'm not sure I can afford you like the actor can. But that's why we have the book, you know. So I started reading that, and I found it fascinating. Now, you have 6 steps. What are the steps briefly? What should people look for when they're trying to improve their lives?
Well, let me back up if I can first
okay.
and tell you that before you jump into 6 steps, the The reason I wrote this book, Sam, was exactly for yourself. Most people are not going to hire me as a business coach or a life strategist. Right. I wrote this book and said, here's a way for people to get, you know, 20 years of my message, 20,000 hours of coaching, 100,000 sessions with all these extraordinary people from all walks of life.
Wow, that's
to
amazing.
Put it into as easy as possible a turnkey solution for people.
Right.
Here's what I discovered, though. I've worked with as many people as I have, Sammy. You know what? What kills people's performance, what stops them from making that next movie or, you know, launching that next career or turning to that, you know, that beautiful gal and saying, hey, we should go out sometime, what kills their performance is four addictions.
Mm.
Now, I just did this talk at the Laguna Beach High School in front of a bunch of seniors. So picture when I say the word addiction to a bunch of high school seniors, they all look at me and giggle. And I said, what could you be addicted to?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they all know drugs and alcohol and gambling and food and sex. And I said, all those are the classics. But I'm talking about what kills your performance. Why do you do those things?
Right.
So, Sam, the four addictions, number one is the addiction to the opinion of other people.
Right.
Think about Los Angeles. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Southern California. You know, we've got a lot of people that are really wrapped up in what does everyone else think of me?
Mm,
am I
right.
good
That's
enough?
True.
Yeah.
Am I smart enough?
Mm.
Am I pretty enough? I've got two young boys, and I tell them all the time, don't care what anybody else thinks. Know who you are and live your life the way you want to live it, and you'll be just fine.
Right.
But that one addiction stops a lot of people. The second one is the addiction to drama. Sam, I mean, I'm on your website. I see some of the people you've talked to. You know. I mean, we live in a world of drama. People are just gossiping, and they're crazy. And the reality is that also kills their performance because if they're focusing on that stuff, they're not focusing on achieving what they want.
That makes
sense. The third
sense.
One, though, that is really hurting people today is the addiction to the past.
Mm.
You know, we're all waiting for the market to come back. We're all waiting for the good times to show up again. But the reality is the world just keeps evolving and changing, and you either keep making adjustments or you become irrelevant.
Right.
That's true.
And then the last one, addiction number four, is the addiction to worry.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just got too many people worrying today. Instead of doing something about it, They're covering themselves up in their bed and they're waiting for something to happen instead of getting involved and doing something.
Right.
So first, to really look at what of those four addictions are holding you back from moving forward. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I guess we're caught in this desire to either live in the past or in the future, which worrying is about, and we don't focus on the present as much.
Absolutely right. I mean, you know, it's been interesting talking to people today, and you know, one of the gals I just talked to is a great radio host in Washington, D.C. She said, Tom, for me, I suffer from worry, she said, and I suffer from drama.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, is it a male or female thing? And I said, absolutely not. I said, everybody deals with these. The question is, Sam, which one's stopping you from going out and performing at the level you want? And when I say performing, I mean in your relationships, in your career, and with your health and vitality.
Right.
You know, the three primary areas of our life.
Right. Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
I've heard it said, hi, Tom, this is Kara, by the way.
Kara, you have amazing eyes.
My, are you looking at me right now? You're so cute. Tell me more. I love it.
She loves that.
Stop it.
You see, she's
Stop
addicted
it.
To the
I'm
opinion
addicted
of others.
To it all. Just give me a big addiction smoothie and I'm drinking it. No, actually, I've heard it said, and I don't know, you may have said this to me, Sam, or somebody did, that guilt is about the past and worry is about the future.
Right.
And I think that that's really, really interesting. And I think it's very relevant what you're saying as far as, you know, people kind of being tied up to the fear. I think everything, the root of everything is either fear or love. And that's kind of what we operate in. And so I ask myself a lot of times when I make decisions, am I doing this because of a fear-based decision or because of a love-based decision, which would mean trust and faith as opposed to, you know, irrational or knee-jerk or what about me? What's going to happen to me? And I think that those kind of tie into what you're saying. Tom, I must ask you, though. Are you there?
He's here.
Yep.
Okay, so Life by Design, you just said that you wrote this amazing book because most people won't be able to really hire you or afford you. So what if everybody goes out and buys your book? What's going to happen to your consulting business? Why would people still like want to hire you if they can get it for, what is this, $15 or $20?
Come
or?
On, it works out better when you work with them.
I know, but come on,
sure.
Think about it.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny.
Well, listen, I'm a business person, you know, first and foremost. And what I know is, See, my vision is to inspire a million people to live and work by design. That's really, you know, when you finally at the end of the day ask yourself the great questions, why am I here, Carol? What, you know, what's my purpose? What am I here to do? You know, you look at the 20 years of my career, this book is really kind of the greatest hits. And if I can deliver that message for, you know, $15 on Amazon, then that's a great thing. Will it impact the other side of my business? I certainly hope so. But the reality is, what I know is this. At the end of the day, yesterday I did a talk, and a gal walks up to me and she says, I work with abused women, and I have two different houses that I support, and I'm going to buy a book for all those women. You know what I said? I'm giving you the books.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, no, I see your heart. Your heart is really the message and not so much the necessarily profit.
Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think success, what defines success? I'm kind of curious to get to the heart of when people say, oh, I want to be back on top or this, that, and the other. And, you know, it's hard for me to, I get that we're all kind of attracted to being the winner. You know what I mean? And I get that. But what does success really look like? Is it really being the winner, or do sometimes you need to go through hard times to build character? Not that you orchestrate it, but that you embrace it, because there's character defining things that happen that when you do get back on top, you have these tools in your character. Or is it all about just, you know, I'm kind of curious to hear from you, like, what does success mean? What do you think success means? Or how do you present success?
So, sure. So I'm very mindful of, even inside this book here, I said, look, life by design is not life by Tom Ferry's design.
Okay.
It's by your design.
Okay.
You need to define for yourself, success is a value. The challenge that people have is I say to you, so Carol, what does it mean to be successful? Most people's rule to achieve that value is nearly impossible. So I say, you know, Carol, I say to every client, I say it inside the book, what does it mean to be successful? And they say, well, for me to be successful, I've got to be a size zero. I've got to have an unbelievable relationship with someone that never argues and always agrees with me. I've got to have great sex every time. I've got to have more money than I could ever spend. And I've got to have this car, this house, yada, yada, yada. And I say, so how close are you to that? And they say, I'm nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And for most of them, they make it so impossible to achieve.
Right.
But now, Garrett, they always feel bad. And
but
the bottom
is that
line,
success,
they just feel
though?
Bad,
I mean,
they don't perform well.
Yeah, but that's not even success, though. That's not success.
I think success is if you achieve what you set out to do.
Okay, you're right. But
right?
I guess he talked about what your purpose is. Is somebody's purpose in life, I mean, they may make it their purpose, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is if somebody says, you know, my purpose is to be a size zero, have sex every day that's mind-blowing, to live in this house, have this car, and have people love and adore me, is that really the purpose of why we're here? Is that really – that's what I'm trying to ask. I mean, I see what Tom's saying. Go for it, Tom.
Yeah, you're asking the right question. I mean, listen, I think that people today are deeper, but when I sit down and actually talk to people and I ask them the question, how do you define success? How do you know when you're successful? I'm shocked by the answers I get, and usually the answers, Kara, are nowhere near what they're doing and what they really want. Mm. So I actually ask five questions inside the book, and I challenge people to answer the questions because they were the same kind of questions that, you know, people like Jack Welch or Mother Teresa, to go to the complete other opposite end of the spectrum, had answered and really, you know, governed how they operated. So, you know, Mother Teresa was extremely successful, and so is Steve Jobs.
Right.
So,
but
so
in
you,
a
it,
different
you,
way.
You can't say success is blank. I mean, you could certainly say, Sam, yes, it's the, you know, the realization of a worthwhile goal. But what Carol wants to do, what I want to do, and what Sam want to do are entirely different.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're right. So let's take away the word success.
It's not doing it your way, you know. My son says to me, Daddy, I don't want to play soccer. I say, good, don't play. Why were you playing? He said, because everybody else did. I said,
right.
Michael, which he was dealing with the first addiction, the addiction to the opinion of others. And I said,
right.
What do you love to do? He said, I love to read and I like computers. And I said, hey, it worked out okay for Bill Gates.
Yeah. There you go.
That's cute.
There you go.
Follow me?
Yeah, I do. I get that. I guess I like asking those deep heart questions about purpose. Let's take away the word success, because you're right. Success can be people can be successful a lot of things that are destructive, right? They can achieve goals. They can you know, blueprint it out, check off the boxes. Bam, they made it. But I guess I'm asking is like real purpose and is helping people discover real purpose, or they just get to decide? Because I think there's a lot of pop psychology out there that's just self-serving, and it's very self-glorifying, and like everybody, it's all self, and I think it's empty. And I'm trying to ask kind of like where yours comes in.
I actually ask them, I said, look, there's five questions you got to answer. And question number one is, what's your purpose? And I back it up by saying, why are you on this planet?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why are you really here? And you know what? Most people can't answer that question because they get so stuck. And again, you mentioned earlier, the guilt of the past and the worry in the future. So I take them through all these exercises, trying to help them get to why you're here. And then it leads into the second one, you know, what are your natural talents? What are you great at doing? I'm not a fan of people that say, work on your weaknesses. I say, plus and enhance your strengths. My son doesn't want to play soccer. Don't play soccer. You want to read and work on the computer? Read and work on the computer.
Right.
I like
sense?
That. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
you're right. We got a lot of people today that are in this sort of superficial, you know, state of what it means to be successful. And my experience is, as long as you are deciding how you want your life to be and then you're living it that way,
right,
by my definition, you're successful.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And
well, then
know,
Hitler,
I mean,
was successful, wasn't he?
Well, maybe in his own way, but...
But that's what he's saying. He's saying people are defining what their goals are, and if they're achieving them, that defines success. And he's right, but I'm saying then you can argue that Hitler was successful.
Well, yeah, that's not good.
It's true, though. It's true. True principle.
I'm a big fan of that, the conversation of it's got to be a worthwhile goal.
Right.
See, for me, does it make a difference? Am I serving the community, or is it just a selfish act? You know, I want a new car.
Right.
There's something wrong with that, because if you didn't get the new car, then all those other people don't have jobs, the salesperson doesn't make a commission, and someone else isn't putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I hear you.
Right.
But I'm with you, because I've heard the debate, well, was Obama successful? Was Hitler successful? You know, and that's usually, I usually say to those people, look, you're giving yourself way too much addiction number two called drama.
Right, right.
I actually think it's exploring the depth of your principle, really. It's stretching it to see its boundaries. I don't think it's a drama thing. I think it's kind of going, well, where's the heart of it, you know? And I'm really, I think the more even in this conversation I'm asking that, I'm getting to see more of where your heart is. If I just listen to what you're saying at face value, I could go, okay, versus, oh, you know what? What does this really mean? What does success mean? What does purpose mean? And I feel like it's really extracting more of the heart of where you're coming from. So I see a purpose in it.
No doubt. I got a friend of mine who wrote a wonderful book called Crush It, a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk, and he and I have a very similar passion, which is, look, you got to find your DNA. Who are you? Do you know what I mean? What do you love to do?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many people today that are stuck in jobs and stuck in relationships, and they're uninspired, and the moment they break themselves free and finally say, you know what I want to do? I want to work on computers and read.
Right.
The moment they do it, all of a sudden they feel great, and you know, at the end of the day, Carol, what I really want is, I want people to feel good. You know, and I don't mean Pollyanna, false sense of reality. I'm not looking for that stuff. I wanted to dig deep. The first book I wrote was called Breakdown to Breakthrough. You said it earlier. I think people need to sometimes smack a tree before they realize, hey, maybe I'm drinking too much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I think people need to experience that, because you don't learn from experiences you're not having. You learn from the experiences you've had.
Yeah.
And you learn way more from mistakes than you do from winning.
Right. And, you know, I like the fact that you say, you know, some people live in an active coma, you know. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, which is true. You know, I mean, many people don't stop and think about the things you're mentioning. And they, like you said, hope that one day will be better and, you know, they'll be rescued. And
I think that's pretty spot on. I think a lot of people have, like, live in, like, a malaise and they're having a lobotomy. Especially, I feel like I meet tons of people like that.
You two are like a little defibrillator, man. You're waking people up. I love it.
Yeah.
Well,
but listen, if you're willing to ask the tough questions and share that kind of message and really dig deep, to me, you're living. If you're just superficial, you're in a coma and you walk around going, everything's fine, I mean, you might as well get in a box and wait, because you're already dead.
Yeah. Wow.
I totally agree, actually. I mean, maybe not necessarily go in the box now, but I get the metaphor, you know. I get that. I think that there's a lot of people. Even in my Bible studies, I've been going to this Bible study, and great people individually, but collectively, they just don't know how to be vulnerable. They're not really, and you can't force people to be vulnerable or be intimate, mm-hmm. but that's kind of the point of going, is to get to know each other, get to know God, and really kind of let the guard down and have those true moments. And what I've noticed, and not just in Bible studies, but I've noticed it with people that are afraid of really being open and vulnerable for whatever reasons, they would rather have information exchanging conversations where it's like, oh, I like this, you like that, very topical conversations because it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you want to get to the meat and the heart of the conversations with people, they quickly change the subject because they don't feel safe.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you're doing it in a Bible study, which is why you're going there, is to have those conversations, and people are still, you know, avoiding those topics. And I think that that's kind of an active coma thing, too. Maybe not necessarily their whole spirit and who they are, but socially, it's kind of that like coma-like. Nobody's really connecting, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of pointless.
Yeah.
It goes back to that's the addiction to the opinions of others.
Yeah.
I don't want to share because if I go too deep and I tell you that my relationship isn't good or I'm struggling here or you know financially I'm in hardship, I don't want to share that because you guys might look at me differently.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fear.
That one addiction affects so many people that, and again, they're just not aware of it.
Right.
That's
yeah.
why this book has been so much fun because people are now walking around going, and again, you two understand, I don't want people labeling themselves, and I don't want them going home and reading this book and calling their spouse and saying, you're addicted to drama.
Yeah.
You know, then they're being the problem.
Yeah.
But giving them the tools to recognize, look, the reason I'm not sharing in that Bible study is I'm afraid of what everybody else thinks. But wait a minute, if I'm a child of God, you know, it's okay. This is a safe environment.
It should be, yeah. That's the whole concept.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Tom Ferry. The book is Life by Design. Do you have a website where we can learn more?
Sure. If you visit TomFerry, FERRY.com, TomFerry.com, or you can find me on, I spend a lot of time on Facebook connecting with people. If you go to Facebook.com/CoachTomFerry, I've got all kinds of, you know, fun videos and just lots of tools. I'm very committed to helping people wake up from the coma and live their life by design.
Well, that's cool. Sounds good to me. Okay, so everybody go get Life by Design by Tom Ferry. And thank you for taking the time,
thank
Tom.
You
I know you've talked a lot today, so now you
talked out, man.
You get to take a break now.
Thanks so much for sharing.
I'm ready for a nap.
Yeah, there you go. Take one.
You get the opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, Tom, all the best
Bye,
to
Tom.
You. Take care.
Take care.
Cool. So that's pretty interesting.
I like him.
Huh?
I like him.
Yeah, he's cool. And, you know, I mean, you can hear that people are genuine, you know, when they talk and stuff. And I don't think you can be successful at something like this unless you're really into people.
I think you're right, you know? Man. I think you're totally right.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Don't you hope it's gone.
to jump in on the conversation, dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Karen in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
You with us?
Yes, I'm with you.
Good. Did you hear about this plane in Libya that crashed and there's a child survivor, one survivor.
One kid survivor?
One kid survived.
Are you kidding?
If you see this plane, you'd ask yourself how anybody
How old was the kid?
I don't know. He looks to me like in his maybe early teens or something. I don't know if have the age here, but I'll look at it and tell you.
And that's awful.
There were like 100 people on the plane.
Seriously?
Yeah. They found 96 bodies already. Yeah. How old is he? They don't say.
Oh, man, that's awful.
Yeah. But they have a picture of him. Oh, he's believed to be 10. Okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, when your plane is about to crash and stuff? I mean, those are one of the, I think it's one of the worst ways to go, huh?
A plane crash?
Yeah.
It's probably instant, though.
It's not instant because you feel it going down, you know
well,
you're going to die.
Well, I think there's fear. There's fear, and then there's that, I mean, I've never been in a plane crash, but fear, and then you have the anticipation of the, like the plane's going everywhere. But I think as soon as it crashes, you're done.
Yeah, you're done, yeah.
So I don't think there's pain in that way.
There's no pain, yeah, but it's a terrible way to go, you know, when you're staring death in the face.
I'm supposed to be going skydiving
yeah.
this summer.
Really?
Yeah.
And you're crazy.
I know I'm crazy.
You don't have a fear of heights or anything like that?
Yeah, I do. I'm going you with do? A good friend of mine, and he's like, no, we're going. And I'm like, shouldn't we know our place here?
Yeah, you're crazy because you know what? If you jump and you don't like it, you're stuck there in the air.
Well, there's two. You get two chutes on.
Uh huh.
And I'm doing it with where there's another person with you
right,
like, on your back.
Right.
So there's actually like four chutes.
Right.
So that's a good probability. It would be.
I'm not saying that something's gonna happen. It's just scary as fucking hell, you know. And you know what? I used to fly a plane, and you know, just a Cessna and that, and I used to enjoy it a lot, but I don't think I could do it now. It seems like as I get older, I get more afraid of heights.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what about this? Okay, another thing you're supposed to be doing is doing the, what's it called? Line, where it's like you're in like a forest or, you know where...
They connect like a rope
yeah,
and you slide down.
Yeah, the rope is sliding.
Yeah,
from tree to tree, kind of like your monkeys or something.
Right. Yeah, I forgot what it's called.
Yeah,
but it has a name.
Oh, it's called tandem.
Okay.
Yeah, and do you think that that's too crazy?
No, that I would do. Oh, you mean like over a deep?
Yeah, like
valley
the whole,
or something.
Yeah.
Wow. I might do it, yeah.
You
I might do that.
Sam, you're funny.
I might do that.
You're like, oh, yeah, no. Okay, well, no, I think that would be fun, though, like a rush, just...
Mm-hmm. No, I like doing that, but not over a canyon, for crying out loud.
Really?
Yeah.
Then you can see down below. Or what about, you know those things that people do where they're in like, the Grand Canyon, or they're at some mountain place, and it's hand gliding, I think, where it's like the big, kind of big kite. You're attached
right.
to a big kite,
hang gliding,
and you're just like...
Right. I know. That sounds so good. You know?
It just seems beautiful. Unless something goes wrong, you're like, this was a bad move.
Yeah.
Bad move.
They have motorized ones, you know,
they
that
do?
They call ultralights, and I used to want to go on one.
Really?
But then I read there's too many crashes. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are
but imagine like you're sitting in something like this and you're just taking off, you know? Isn't that like the most amazing thing?
Sounds so
I
pretty.
I love that.
It's actually called zip lining.
Zip lining
is what I was
okay.
talking about. But hand gliding, I wonder if there's a lot of deaths from hand gliding.
No, not really.
Then why would there be more with motorized?
Because it depends more on the motor, I guess, than it does just on the gliding.
Okay, what about hot air balloons?
What about them?
Would you do that?
Yeah.
That one freaks me a little bit out.
Really?
To be honest.
Yeah.
I just don't think that basket's sturdy.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's a sturdy basket. I just think, you know what, if I were to do that, I'd definitely want a parachute on my back.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But you don't hear a lot of crashes of hot air balloons.
Well,
you know.
There's a kid. A dad with a kid and
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. It's not my thing though.
Yeah.
I do have a question though, and I hope this person is not listening. I feel really bad. I told him not to listen, so please be not listening. Here we go. Ready? I gotta ask you some man questions.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Have you been dating?
I always date. You know
You've
me. I'm always
dating,
going
right?
on dates. I'm always
yeah.
going on dates. And you know, for those of you listening, that I do it for your listening pleasure, so I have stories, so be grateful. But I'm also doing it because it's fun. I mean, there's no way around it. It's fun. It feels good to go out and be girly and to see if there's connections there. And I just like people.
Meet people.
Really kind of what it is. And if it if it goes beyond that, great. And if it doesn't, no hard feelings.
Right.
So I went out with the dude. And
how old was he?
He's about 15 years older.
15 years older.
About 10, about 15 years older.
So he's about 40-something.
About 40.
Okay.
Okay. So, oh, man. Here we go. First time out.
Okay.
Check comes. He grabs it. Right. Grabs the bill. Hey, do you need help with that? Do you want me to contribute? Is what I say. I do that more as a rhetorical question.
Yeah. You're not expected to contribute.
Well, I'm always prepared to.
Right.
And a little backstory before I say this. A little backstory. I used to be, this is going to sound weird, but I used to have a real, I'd get so uncomfortable when the bill came that I would just
grab it.
Or I'd always feel so guilty if a guy paid for me. I don't know where that comes from, because I have friends that are like, who gives a shit? Like, I've got girlfriends that are like, let him pay. Like, they don't care, you know, and they just think it's the right, the woman should be paid for. And I would feel so bad about it and so guilty that I would be like, no, or definitely have to contribute or at least pay or whatever.
Right.
And I've definitely come full circle with that. That's not where I am anymore. And I definitely realizing the kind of person I want to be with, I don't want to attract a guy like that. Like, I want to be with a guy who can, you know, be the man in that that department. So
does paying for the bill mean you being a man?
I do think so, yeah.
Okay.
I do think it doesn't define you and it doesn't make you a better person, but I think there's something emotional behind it, whereas it's not about the dollar amount, because that's, you know, we're all going to be in different stages in our life, but it's about wanting to be a provider and wanting to honor her. And like, if you go out and she gets all dressed up and you guys have a great time, and women are nurturers and they give in their own way, a different, they provide the life, the entertainment, and then when the bill comes, it's like honoring that night. And I think it's also representative of wanting to be a caretaker and a provider. And it, you don't have to do it like five-star dinners. It doesn't have to be expensive. It could be like, it can even be like, you know, going, it's just little things. It doesn't even have to be dinner. It could be like, oh, you know, you could do cheap things and still be the one that's kind of providing that experience.
Right.
And I think that that, and I don't ever want to have a conversation with a guy about why I believe this. I just kind of want to be with somebody that is on the same page. And if he's not there, I don't want to convince the guy. He's just not, we're not in the same place.
Right.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But
where is it written that the guy has to pick up the check every time?
Well, I don't believe every time.
Right.
I don't think, I think unfortunately in this city specifically, men have been taken advantage of, and there's such a usury mentality where, you know, you see gold diggers and you see, it's just, and then you see guys that use the money thing to get something too. I mean, it's both sides, right?
Right.
I think there's just been such an abuse of it that it can be misperceived why that's important, because men feel like, well, they're just taking advantage of them, or there's, you know, like, it's just, it's hard to see the heart behind it, because there's no heart. It's become take from each other. Like, the girl's trying to get something and the guy's trying to get something, and now it's lost all its original purpose. You know what I mean? So I really wouldn't want to even have to have a conversation with a guy about this, because he's not going to see it. If he's not there, he's not going to see it. He's just going to take
it. But what if he doesn't have a lot of money and you like him, you know?
Well, I think that there's tons of things. I mean, I've had a boyfriend that, I mean, my last boyfriend, he didn't have a lot of money, and we, we did great things. We had a great time.
Right.
You know, you do dinners at each other's house, you know, you both bring something, you go to coffee. You
But that's when you're in a relationship.
Yeah, you know? But I mean, there was, yeah, we did some nice dinners too, but it doesn't have to be about expensive stuff. I mean, you can get creative. You really can. You can do picnics. You can do, let's go on a hike together. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do that are still providing an atmosphere.
Right, and, but it's traditional to go to dinner and stuff, you know?
And I think if you can't afford going to dinner at all, then you shouldn't be dating.
And don't date.
Not in that point. You're not in a place in your life to date.
Right.
So this is how it goes. So the first date, the check comes, and I asked, you know, do you want me to help out with it? He's like, no. I was like, sure. He goes, next time. He says, next time. And I thought that was kind of weird, because it's like, are we already doing like a
tit? He planted the seed.
It's like a tit for tat kind of thing, like keeping record. I was like, this is weird, but whatever. I let it go. So he asked me out that night to go out the next night again. And we went out. We had a great time. And I said, oh, I should have taken you to this restaurant. Because I told him, oh, I really want to take you to this restaurant, because it's one of my favorite places to go, and I would totally, you know, foot the bill. I would do it not because I feel indebted, but because I want to share something. And mm-hmm. if you ask the person out, I think it's kind of your obligation to pay. Mm-hmm. I think so, generally. Like, if I say, Sam, let's go to lunch, you could kind of expect.
Right, you're the one who offers.
I'm going to probably pick up the tab. Right. Not right now, because I'm not in that place. But you get, ideally, that's the way it goes, right?
So much for you inviting me to lunch.
Huh? Well, my point is you know when I invite you that that's how it's going to go down. Have you had an invite lately? No. For a certain reason. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd probably say, hey, let's go to coffee, and I'd get your coffee, right?
Right.
The same principle applies. It's just different dollar amounts, right?
Right, right.
So he asked me out, and then we go out, and I had mentioned, oh, I should have taken you to that place tonight. He goes, oh, is this the time when you're treating?
Mm.
He even said that.
Yeah.
And I was like, it can be. And I felt awkward. I was like, it can be. Or you can just wait for the time I, you know, take you to this place. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to wait because I want that third date, you know, whatever. Mm. And I still feel like it's awkward now. Like it's a, we're having to, you know, I've really never experienced it like this before. And so then the bill comes. Okay. And this is so embarrassing. So the bill comes and he's like, okay, well, I said, okay, how do you want to do this? Because I was confused. Now I'm totally, he asked me out. I'm so confused. I don't want to be rude. I never want to make somebody feel like they have to do something they don't want to do.
Right.
So I was like, oh, how do you want to handle this? He's like, well, do you want to get it? He asked me that. And I was like, oh, or am I not taking you to the thing? He's like, well, let's just split it, is what he said.
Really?
And I was like gracious about it because I'm not going to be rude about it. And that's fine. I'm prepared to pay for myself. Mm-hmm. So, and he was like, yeah, because we kind of got a lot of drinks. He said that. He even specified what we got and how he wasn't sure if this was my turn. And now we're taking turns.
Right.
And then he was like, yeah, let's just split it. Mm. And we went ahead and split it, which is not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a big deal because it's a second damn date. Mm. You don't go Dutch on the second date. If you want a third date, you don't go Dutch on the second date. You just don't. It's not going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And then we go to leave, and we split the cost of parking.
Really?
And I mean, again, I'm not going to not do those things because I don't want to force somebody to do something they don't want to, right? I'm going to do it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But I do want to be with somebody that is in a position, not necessarily rolling in the cash, but they're willing to take on that responsibility primarily, but they don't have to do it all the time.
Right.
And I'm just like, am I weird about that? Or do you think the second date is appropriate to kind of ask the girl to pay and then, hey, let's just go Dutch?
No, you see, the thing is, I think there's something wrong with asking to pay, but I don't think there's anything wrong with offering to pay.
Okay, I'm with you. I think it's like, don't you appreciate it if somebody offers? Like, they don't just sit there and expect
you. And I probably wouldn't let you pay anyway, you know, but it's nice when someone offers.
Doesn't it make you feel like they're grateful?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like my friends used to say.
Not only that, but a little bit of respect, you know, like not to sit there and expect.
Exactly. That's why I do offer, because, and if they take me up on it, I'm prepared to do it, but it's kind of like I always want somebody to feel like I'm not taking advantage of them, and then I am grateful.
Right.
But I kind of got to tell you, I mean, before in the past I wouldn't have cared about it, but now I'm like, no, I know the kind of man I want to be with, and he's not a bad guy, he's a great guy, but mm-hmm. you know, we're just not in the same place.
Right.
And I've just noticed that when the bill comes and you ask her to pay. And it's not like you guys have a relationship already established. It's different when you know each other and there's that bond there and you're like, hey, do you mind picking it up this time? I don't think that's bad.
It happens all the time.
It happens. And when you get married, I mean, if your husband can't work and he gets sick or something, and you're going to have to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. That's why you have a bond and you have a partner that you guys are willing to both pull weight if need be, right? But I think there's something emotional about a man providing,
mm-hmm.
both for the man. I think it's kind of emasculating when a man doesn't provide, not because he can't or whatever, but because he's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's emasculating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an insult to the woman. I feel like if, you know, you're, and I mean, not to like, you know, sing my own praises, but whoever I go out with, whether it be girlfriends or men, we're having a good time. Let me just tell you, okay? Great conversation, and I'm a lot of fun, and I enjoy life. And believe it or not, that's kind of a rarity. And so when I go out with somebody, we have a great time. I'm enjoying the whole experience and laughing, ha, 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 and everything. And it's natural. It's not like put on. It's just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I provide a lot of life. I'm very nurturing, and I'm a giver, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when the bill comes and, you know, you're going to do that, I think it's kind of an insult.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
I don't want to have...
I mean, I see where you come from. You know, I still have an issue with why men are expected to pay. But I guess it's tradition, you know?
Is it more than... Isn't there something behind it, though? It's not just about the... Like, I think there's something... Don't you think, I mean, if your daughter, wouldn't you want your daughter to be with a guy who wants to take care of her? Maybe he doesn't do it all the time, but there's...
Yeah, but you guys on a first or second date, it's not about taking care
of
you.
But that's my point is this first or second date, you really are going to have an expectation
but
to go Dutch?
But it's not about taking care of you, you know?
I'm not asking him to pay my bills, and I'm not asking him to freaking drive me
around and
feed
me. Yeah, but you're talking about taking care of you, you know? I don't
It's about where
that.
It's going. Like, does it's just like when you meet a woman, right? You have certain expectations of her. There's certain things you're looking for, right?
Right, right.
There's certain things that you value that you want to see. There's certain things that you know you're not going to see till later on. And then there's certain things that you're going to expect in a woman that, to see right away. And if they're not there, they're kind of like red flags. Mm-hmm. Or if they're off, right?
Right.
Just like if you're going on a date with a woman and she's asking you to buy her tons of shit. And you're like, what? This is a second date. Who is this girl? Right?
Yeah.
Or whatever those things are, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think being with a man that he puts his best foot forward and he asks you out. Mm-hmm. And then he asks you to pay for the bill.
Yeah.
That's cheap.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that.
That's kind of cheap, huh?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I asked a few of my guy friends because I was like, you know, am I being ridiculous? I'm like, no. Second date.
Yeah.
Come on. So, and he asks you out. And then you have the nerve, like, and then you want to, like, initiate getting kissed or something.
Mm-hmm.
That is a turn. I can't even explain it, but it's just a turn off. It's like, nope, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Because it feels like a friendship. It neutralizes it for some reason. It feels like a friendship.
Mm.
I don't know why, but it just, boom, turned off.
Yeah, that's the way you're used to thinking. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, what about you? When you would go dating, would you...
No, I always pick up the bill. I mean, even if we go with friends and stuff, sometimes I would I'd just offer, you know,
uh-huh.
to pick up the whole thing. But...
But let me ask you this. I mean, when you were dating women and stuff, did you feel... mad that you were paying all the time? Or?
No, I didn't feel mad. I just felt that it shouldn't be expected of me, you know? Because,
okay.
Yeah, I mean,
but if you ask her out, do you feel like you're assuming that responsibility?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like if she were to ask you out, maybe then you'd expect or hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, whoever I go with, I always expect, you know, prepare to pay if they're not offering or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I don't think about it too much. I really don't.
Yeah.
But I guess on date, it, you know. It's unusual. It's unusual. I mean, I agree with you that you can do that once you're in a relationship.
Yeah,
and
there's
it's
some,
equal
you kind of know the person and there's a trust there.
Right.
And you know that you mutually respect each other and you kind of get a feel for where their heart is and that this and the other. But I kind of feel like, you know, people have been taken advantage of in this town. You see a lot of usury, a lot of people just using people in those ways. So I think that there's a guardedness that, you know, and the reality is it's unfortunate for him because I'm not that way.
Right.
And I mean, I would have like one of like my last boyfriend. I mean, really, I mean, I treated him like a damn king, you know, cooked for him all the time. I have great friends. He got to do all the stuff with my friends. And when I broke up with him, I know he was sad because he wasn't going to hang out with my friends anymore too. I have a fun life.
Yeah,
you know, I bring a lot to the table. So whoever I'm dating is getting hooked up, really.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm not a millionaire, but I sure do lots of fun, adventurous things. And the person is constantly going to have a great time. And I'm a nurturer and all those things.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, I don't think that's an issue, like what you bring to the table, you know, but it's just a question of, yeah, that type of thinking, you know. And look, I can understand, you know, when you date a lot, it's like it's expensive. But I think once you ask someone for a date, you should be prepared to pay.
And I'm sure there's like cheaper things you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff. Or if you're not in a position to do it, I mean, hey, there's no judgment if you're busted broke. I know broke.
Well, not from you, but maybe there's some other women.
No,
who
I mean,
would
I don't
judge.
I don't have a judgment on it. I'm just like, look, then don't. Ask the girl out or do something that's free, like, hey, want to go on a hike or something like that, you know, where you're not in a position where you can't provide and you're expected to, you know, something like that. I don't know. Or maybe it's not the time in your life to date if you can't, because I think that is somewhat of a man's responsibility. Maybe not all the time, but, you know, I think you should want to be that person. So I don't know. I know the guy wants to go out again and I'm not interested.
You're not interested because of that.
Few other things that I noticed too, but mainly that was a kicker for me because I felt somewhat insulted by it and felt like devalued a bit, you know?
Yeah.
Not like he was trying to do that, but kind of like, oh, he's just not in touch with that side. And I want to be the guy that like wants to lavish a woman and not necessarily like it has to be 5-star dinners every night, but just thoughtful and really, you know, grateful that you guys are out. And just, I've just been out with guys where it's where they make you feel like you're so special.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a beautiful thing. It's really great. I mean, and I've been out with guys like that, and it's still not a connection. It doesn't mean that, you know, we're definitely going to date.
Right.
But I really respect them for going out of their way to, and I don't even mean things. Like, I went out with this one guy where he just, I don't know, I just felt like he was so happy to be with me, and we went and we were sitting at this restaurant bar, and like there wasn't chairs for both of us, and he was just so insistent that I sat down, and he stood up the whole time, and I could just tell the way he was looking at me and the way he ordered everything. Mm-hmm. Like, he was very insistent on like getting the drinks. Like, he was very making sure we had the food, the drink. It just, I don't know, I felt like he was being a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And very I liked that. I don't know, I just felt like honored and special.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was...
So you have certain expectations for men, you know, and when they don't fit
into
that, it's
And I'm not like a money grubber type girl. Like,
right.
I'm not after like a guy's stuff. I'm really not. And that's why I'm saying, like, if I'm saying this, you know, it's kind of like really going Dutch on the second date.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. That should be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, you know, he's going to pay for it now.
He's going to pay for it. He can go for whoever he wants. And
right.
Maybe he'll be with somebody else that, you know.
Yeah, doesn't care, huh?
Doesn't care, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to lecture a guy about it. I'm not going to be like, hey, by the way,
yeah,
you really blew it because you're cheap ass. Like, I'm never going to. Because I don't think that's going to be received. I think it's too easy for a guy that's guarded in that area to hear what you're saying. I think that he's probably just going to feel like you're just a shallow, you know, materialistic girl, which I'm not
right
at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm just going to, I mean, I don't have to even have to say anything. He might be listening right now. If that's the case, that's why I don't tell people to listen. That's why I tell people not to listen to the radio.
It's okay. It's okay. They can listen.
Well, they can. Should they?
I don't know. I don't know. Okay. We'll take another break. We'll be back right after this.
Spins around.
our shitty talk radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Did you know that legalizing marijuana is going to be on the ballot, on the election ballot this November?
Really?
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
And you're voting yes?
I'll be voting yes, absolutely. And, you know, that's what I said. You can't put the genie back in the bottle, you know?
Got it.
Once it became, like, legal for medicinal use and stuff, you know, it's just a matter of time
it's
before they legalize
it. Now, are you one of those people that believe, one of those people, that believe that it was just, it's a whole... It was just such a prejudice type thing, and that it's been placed in a light that's not true, and that it's more about commerce and all that stuff. And you know what I mean? Like, people mm-hmm. are saying, like, it's been kind of given an image that's just not true as far as...
Yeah, you know, I mean, if they tax this, it could really bring in a lot of revenues for California, you know? So...
And I've heard that part of the reason that they're going to... They're really... It's like California's in debt, so what's the next thing that they do? Let's legalize marijuana because they want to offset the debt.
Sounds good to me.
You think that's why?
It's a good idea, yeah.
Now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely for revenues and stuff, you know. Otherwise, what reason would they have, you know? But, you know, it's up to the voters. And they've got a picture here of some big buds on CNN.
Big buds?
Big buds.
So if they legalize it in California, it's still federally against the law, right?
Right.
Which is how it's been. It's been legally...
Right, exactly.
It's been legal for medicinal use, but
right.
you can still be busted by the feds, but they don't care.
Right.
If they were to come in.
Yeah, they're going to go after the dispensaries, not after individuals. And
how does it work, too, when a state legislates something as legal, but then it still violates federal use? How does that work?
I'm not sure, you know. I'm not sure. I'm sure they could go to court and fight this out at the Supreme Court, but I never heard of something like this happening.
I don't understand either. Like, if you're high in California and then you cross state lines... And now being high is illegal.
Right. Especially in Nevada. If you cross the state line to Nevada, man, they're very, very strict there, you know?
Yeah.
If they just find, like, a seed in your car, you're in jail. Yeah.
Well, I guess some of the questions, I think, on the opposing viewpoint is, you know, if you're legalizing marijuana, like, where does it stop? Legalizing crack? I mean, do you think that's a stretch, or do you see any kind of...
No, I don't think they're related at all.
Well,
I think it's more related to alcohol, and we have to ask ourselves, if alcohol is legal, why isn't marijuana?
Got it. So you're saying that, and I've heard a lot of these arguments that, you know, alcohol is much more of an impairs people's judgment and is more dangerous than marijuana.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, and I think the evidence speaks for itself, you know.
Mm.
There's a lot of, you know, drunk drivers that create problems for people. There's a lot of aggression at home. When people are alcoholic and they alienate a lot of people. Now, with pot, I don't think it's the same way, you know?
Mm.
And if anything else, people are mellower when they're on pot. And
they're just hungry, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's just, it's not a question of, you know, whether it's going to be like, go on to crack and stuff. I mean, that's a whole different ball game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Crack is very dangerous and... It creates a lot of problems, and
yeah.
the addiction is really, really difficult when you're hooked on crack, from what I understand.
You're right. Now, what about it being like the gateway drug, as people call it?
It could be. It could
be.
Yeah,
okay.
But,
so you're not denying that. You're just saying.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, you know, but that's beside the point, I think, you know. The question is, people are going to do it anyway, so the question is, do you decriminalize it, you know, and that's the bottom line here, is rather than put people in jail for smoking a joint, you know, maybe you can give them a ticket or something, you know, which is what happens now.
Oh, that is.
You know, it's a misdemeanor, yeah, so they'll give you a ticket, I think, if they catch you with less than an ounce or something.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, like, if you were to look at other countries like Amsterdam and, you know, Canada and places that it is legal, pretty much legal.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. In Amsterdam and in the Netherlands, it's not legal. It's just that it's tolerated, you know. So that's it. On the books, it's still illegal there.
It is.
But it's tolerated. They don't get you in trouble or anything.
What would you say to people that consider it a social breakdown? Meaning that starting to legalize recreational drugs, mm-hmm. drug use, is a social breakdown.
Why?
I'm asking you, actually.
No, but I'm asking, why would it be?
I think it's the And I'm not saying I totally agree with it, but I know that these are questions that I get from people mm-hmm. when I have these discussions. And for somebody that's for legalizing it or decriminalizing mm-hmm. it, as you say, which I don't really see the thing, is that it basically kind of can break down the motivation of a society, the fact that it
What about alcohol then? I mean, don't
I don't
you
know
think
if
that...
they're the exact. I don't know, and I'm not really taking a side. I'm really trying to discover it because
I
think that...
I just think alcohol is a stronger drug, you know, and it
well,
has
it
a lot
is,
of implications.
Well, it is, but I think that there's something when people have a couple drinks, it kind of lifts your spirits a bit. Whereas mm-hmm. I think when you, I mean, if you drink to excess, of course, it makes drunk drivers. It kind of makes this depressant type thing. But when you've only had a couple drinks, it's kind of a lifting type.
Well, so
experience.
The same with pot.
Is
know?
It? But
yeah.
I thought that you know, like kind of creating unambitious people, people that are avid users, not like a recreational kind of pot smoker, but like...
I don't think you're creating them. You're just putting it out there, and whoever it works for, then they use it, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's society's place to tell people what to do.
Well, and I agree with that. I mean, I really don't know if I have an argument to where people can say that it should be...
Should stay illegal?
Yeah, I really don't know. Yeah. When you compare it to a lot of the prescription drugs that are out there and how many people have become dependent and have become addicts and lose their lives over it, you know?
And it's just how widespread it is, too, you know? I mean, if you had to put everybody that uses pot in jail, you'd have to take every second, third person, you know?
Now, are you saying now in California that they do not – people don't go to jail for – weed smoking or dealing.
Right.
But they're busting a lot of people that have done, you know,
like dealers and stuff like that. Yeah.
They still go to jail for that.
Right. Unless they're legal. If they have a dispensary and they have the permission to do it, then they don't get in trouble.
Did you say that you were going to open up one at one point?
Me? No, never.
Okay. I thought I heard
Why
somebody.
Would I?
No. I met somebody that said that they were going to open up one. They thought, oh, it's going to be a great business, but that it started popping up on every street corner.
Exactly. And they closed down a lot of them, several hundreds of them.
Really?
Yeah. So there's just a few original ones.
Why'd they close them
because
down?
Because they were not authorized.
How do you get them authorized?
I guess you're supposed to get authorized by the government, you know, just like if you had a pharmacy or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you do weed, right? You smoke it. We've been doing it for years, right?
Right.
And are you an everyday user or no?
No, occasionally, you know.
Like once a week or once a month or something like that, or
I don't know, whenever it's around.
Yeah. So you don't really go out to buy it.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, I would if I was a user, you know, regular user and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it depends. Depends, you know. But again, I'm just for. You know, let people live, you know. I mean, what the hell is the problem with it? You know, there's no problem with it.
Uh-huh.
Everybody seems to be, everybody warms up to it. You know, even people that don't smoke, they don't really care if it's legal or not.
So you definitely think, do you think it's going to pass then definitely? Or?
I think eventually it will. I don't know if this year, but I think we're closer than ever to having it legalized, you know. Because, like I told you, once it's out there and it's half legal, it's going to be legal. It's a matter of time. I mean, can you imagine how much business it's going to create, you know, if you have coffee shops where you can go and smoke?
It smells so disgusting. Like, I don't want to have to go to a coffee shop and smell it. Like, that's...
But in Amsterdam, they have chairs outside. You can sit outside, too.
Oh,
yeah.
I just hope it's not like one of these, like, you know, inside smoking
Besides,
deals.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you were a smoker, it wouldn't bother you, probably.
Well, you said cigarette smoke bothers you.
It does, yeah. I can't be in a room where there's cigarette smoke.
Man, I grew up with some crazy-ass smokers, and we would literally be in my dad's girlfriend's car, and we'd be driving
That's
somewhere,
terrible, man.
And they would give us a crack.
Yeah.
And you couldn't ask for more than a crack of air.
Right.
I'd be, like, choking. I'm like a 10-year-old back there, like,
God.
Choking.
Yeah.
And you
See, that's
and if
terrible.
You and if you ask for more than a crack, they're gonna get pissed. Be grateful we gave you ventilation.
I know. How can anybody smoke inside a car with
it's
the windows up?
Just selfish white trash is what it is. Just selfish white trash. I'm not saying they're awful people, but that act is awful.
Yeah.
That's just a selfish thing.
It really is.
You know, we don't all want to marinate in your thick ass. Freaking nicotine, dirty smelling smoke.
Yeah, you see, then you're imposing on other people, and that's a problem.
Well, and I'm not, I mean, I feel bad for some smokers that are like, man, I can't go anywhere and smoke nowadays. But I gotta be honest with you, man. I live in an apartment complex. People outside smoking that are outside.
Right, and it comes into your apartment.
I'm sitting there. I don't even know they're out there smoking.
Right.
And I start smelling something. I'm like, oh, it stinks. What is this? And then it's like you can feel it.
Right.
I don't think people understand that aren't smokers, or that are smokers don't understand how strong it is to people that aren't smokers.
I know.
And that's impeding on other people. Like, your choice to be a smoker and destroy your body that way isn't my decision.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think that that's kind of jacked up. And I know that it's kind of weird right now for smokers because it's getting so strict.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that it's getting really strict?
Right. Yeah. But it doesn't bother me because I understand. I don't want to impose on people. I mean, even when I smoke on the street, I try to stay away from people so they don't have to smell it, you know?
What about
I'm
your,
a very conscious...
Yeah. What about your balcony?
Yeah, there I don't have a problem.
No, people don't say anything?
No, people don't say anything. Well, that probably bothers them, you know. I mean, I know it bothers me when someone else smokes outside.
Oh, you can smell it?
It
bothers
in.
You?
Yeah, but I just close the window, so what's the big deal, you know? And then open it up again. I mean, you got to remember, you're not the only person that, you know, that lives there. You know, you got to sort of like share the space and be a little tolerant. Mm-hmm. So as long as they're not smoking in your house and that, you know, I don't think it's a problem.
Well, I've never said anything about it because I don't really know... You know, I don't want to create an issue that's
right.
not necessary. But I do think it's like, really, I have to close my windows now.
Right.
I can't have fresh air in my apartment because, and we don't have AC. Now I have to sit with it stifling hot or like, you know, no circulation because.
Yeah, but it's not all day, you know.
No, but I just think it's like, ugh, it's just.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it, you know. What are you going to do, you know?
Go down and have a talking with them.
Yeah, ask them to go on the sidewalk and smoke.
Yeah, and I've actually, when we have parties, we have to tell people if they're going to smoke, go way out to the street because our neighbors don't like smoke either.
Yeah.
So they said people come from our parties will stand outside having a cigarette at the bottom of the staircase, and the people beneath us,
right.
they are getting
they can
it.
Smell it.
Yeah. I'm like, I get it.
I know. It's a sticky issue, you know. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where I stand on that. But, look, as long as I'm a smoker, I just want a little space so I can smoke and not bother anybody.
And how the hell do you run? You guys, we have like a break of 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Sam Hall's ass. I was walking in front of him a second ago. He's like, hurry up. We only got 3 minutes. I'm like, well, I'm just going to the bathroom number one. And that wasn't even what he's talking about. He was talking that I was walking too slow in front of him because he was beelining for the staircase.
Exactly.
How do you get, because you have to get
two
where?
Two hits of the cigarette.
How?
Down here.
Are you serious? So he goes all the way down the staircase and you like run or what?
No, I don't run, but I rush.
Yeah. You run to get all the way out there.
Yeah, because they don't want to smoke in near the building here, so I have to go in the alley here.
Seriously?
Yeah, that sucks, man. But, you know, then again, I can understand what people are talking about, you know, and I'm the last one that wants to impose smoke on other people.
You are like Superman with that, though.
Yeah, I know. I got to stop that, man.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm impressed with how quick you can do it.
Yeah, at least it lets me stretch my body a little bit and walk a little bit.
Yeah, man, he's like, you're running, you're like, get out of my way, push me into the wall, running down, just playing. That's so funny, though. That's funny.
I know. So apparently, remember in China, there was a man that went in and started shooting
kids
and stuff?
Those kindergartners.
Now, apparently, a man with a meat cleaver hacked to death a kindergarten teacher and 7 students in China.
Were these people related?
No. But they are saying China has had a spate of similar attacks. You have to wonder what it is about them attacking children. I mean, is there more
talk about a social breakdown. They don't value human life. People are made in mass quantities there.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you can't have a certain amount of girls. The girls are then... there are too many girls, or they'll give their daughters up for adoption. And basically what I've been told that they do is they strap these girls down, mm-hmm. you know, like in boards.
Mm-hmm.
There's an opening where if they go to the bathroom, it just falls beneath them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're left there. They're not given fluids. They're not given food. They're just left there to die.
Yeah.
Unless somebody adopts them. A friend of a friend of mine, they adopted a Chinese baby girl.
Mm-hmm.
They actually had to pay an extra amount of money to have the baby put into a different hospital in China. And given just enough fluids so that the baby can make the plane ride back to the U.S. Then
really?
Where she had to be hospitalized again.
Wow.
And that's on top of the adoption fees. That's just, hey, you mind taking care of her to like get there so she's not dead?
Mm-hmm.
She's got enough fluids. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's crazy, but they don't value human life there.
Maybe not. I don't know.
No, it's not. And I know a guy, a friend of mine, who is in the movie business and does a lot of costume work over in China. He's just where he got a really good job. And he said it's just, you know, I mean, it's not like everybody's awful, but there's so many seedy things that go on where,
right.
you know, kids are mutilated and then they have to go and they have to steal and then they take it back to like a pimp and
mm-hmm.
all these things. He had all the stuff stolen from him by kids.
Right.
He goes, you don't even really want to know what's going on over there.
Really?
Yeah, which I don't understand why we're doing business with him, but whatever. I just don't understand.
Yeah. Well, we have to. I mean, you can't ignore China. It's a very big market, you know?
Well, I think that we could have, but we haven't, and now they own a lot of our debt, so, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't, but I just, you know, I don't get it.
Yeah. Do you have a desire to go to China?
I would want to go, I think. But, I mean, it's not one of my top 10 places I want to visit.
Yeah.
And it's not like I hate Chinese people or anything like that. I mean, not at all. But yeah. It's the regime. And right. It's what it's bred. And
not only that, but, you know, the daily life there, it's like the food. You probably wouldn't be able to eat anything there, you know, the stuff that they have. It's
what, just, Chinese food?
Yeah. No, not, well, the Chinese food we eat here is not
different.
The same
yeah,
as
yeah,
there,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know. They eat all kinds of shit.
My friend, he went to the Olympics in China. He loved it. He had a great time.
Yeah.
I mean, he saw the good and the bad of it. I mean, there's some amazing things about the country.
Yeah, when you go to the big city, I think it's pretty cool.
I mean, I think there's some amazing... I'm not talking about their innovation or, you know, the good things that have come out of it. I'm talking about the humanitarian rights. Mm-hmm. That because they're such a big economic force, apparently people just don't care anymore, that they don't give a shit about people. It's just kind of like, oh, whatever, they're a huge force. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Keep chopping up kids. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I get a lot of emails, too, from, like a part of this thing called Voice of the Martyrs and a few other organizations that send me information about like Christians that are being persecuted throughout the world in mm-hmm. places where there's no religion of freedom. I'm mm-hmm. sorry, freedom of religion, and just for prayers and things like that, and people mm-hmm. that are falsely imprisoned for just having Christian Bible studies in their home and things like that.
Yeah.
Grandmas being in prison. Grandmas. Can you imagine imprisoning a grandma?
Yeah, well... There you go. I mean, that's what Jews paid a big price for, 6 million people.
Yep. Know? And speaking
of... Following their religion.
Speaking of grandma's going to prison, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Are you ready for this?
I don't know. Ready for what?
This is the call. I had a phone call with my mom, right? I told you how I thought she OD'd, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. So she's okay now?
She's okay. Yeah. So I give her a call. Now, my mom's always hopped up on some kind of cocktail of painkillers. Just how... That's all I know her as, actually. I don't
really?
Even know what her normal voice sounds like. So this is what she said. She's always kind of a little angry, but loves drama. She loves. It's just crazy. So this is how the phone call goes. Ready? Mm-hmm. It goes, hello. Hey, Mom. It's Kara. Hey, how you doing, girl? What's up? What's going on? Hey, Mom. Are you okay? I heard from Miles through a friend on Facebook that you OD'd and that your roommate found you. What? Hell no, I didn't OD, Kara. Okay? I had pneumonia. I had level 4 pneumonia. And it really wasn't even my roommate that found me, okay, Kara? It was the police. The police found me in my apartment. That's how serious my level 4 pneumonia was. I'm gonna kill that brother of yours for spreading my business around.
Really?
I said, Mom, he didn't know if you were alive or dead. He was just trying to make sure. She's like, Kara, I don't OD on that shit, okay? I've just had pneumonia. And I was in ICU for a week, okay, Kara? She's just crazy going on about her drama and her health. I'm like, wow, Mom. I'm like, I'm glad you're okay then. She's like, hell no, I wouldn't do it because she's just so self-righteous, right? And then I go, well, how's your mom doing? How's, you know, I guess my grandma, how's your mom doing? Mm-hmm. Well, she gets out of prison in a year. I said, Mom. Now, meanwhile, Sam, about 8 years ago, mm-hmm. I went, no, like 9 years ago, I get a phone call from my sister. Happy Thanksgiving, Kara. Today, Grandma gets out of prison. I'm like, what? What's Grandma doing in prison? Oh, you didn't hear. Grandma went to prison because she held up a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Are you serious?
I'm not freaking lying, dude.
Wow.
She has crack cocaine addiction.
Really?
Seriously, right? So this is like 9 years ago. So my grandmother, on my mom's side, went to prison for an addiction to crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. Got out of prison on Thanksgiving, and my sister's like, don't tell Mom, but she's going to stay with me for Thanksgiving because she's family and all. You can't turn your back on family. I was like, okay, cool. And then, you know, what is it, 2010, you know, like 9 years later, hey, how's your mom doing? Just touching base. She gets out of prison, Kara, in a year. I'm like, what? I thought she was out a long time ago. Kara, she went back to prison, okay? Where the hell have you been? She's been in prison for 2 years now. She gets another year, and she's getting out of the slammer. I was like, how old is this woman?
Uh-huh.
Kara, she's 66, okay? I'm like, who goes to prison for their second time at 66? Who goes to prison at 66 years old? Well, I don't know, Kara. Who in the hell goes to prison at 66? I can't believe that shit. Now my mom's all self-righteous, like, I got my life together, and this woman's coming at you. This woman's going to prison at 66, or coming out of prison at 66.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Somehow I'm all related to him. I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's a young grandmother, though. 66.
Yeah, my mom was young, too, when she had me. My mom was like 20, 21.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or 22 or something like that. So my mom's actually not even 50 yet.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
My mom's like 48 or 49.
Really?
49, I guess.
Wow, that's weird.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
My dad's like 52 or 51 or something like that. Mm.
Wow.
Isn't crazy?
Yeah.
I've gone on dates with close to my dad's age.
Really?
Nasty.
Yeah.
When I think of it like that, I'm like, gross. So nasty. I actually went back to visit my dad a few, I guess it was like 4 or 5 years ago, and we did like a Thanksgiving over at my dad's friend's house, and like some of his guy friends were looking at me. It's so weird. And one of the dudes was hitting on me.
Really?
He's like a friend of my dad's.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that disgusting? He like called up my aunt one time when I was in town to talk to me, and he was like drunk or high or something, and he's a friend of my dad's, and I'm sure my dad didn't know, but he was like, hey, Kara, this is your dad's friend, Bernie, or whatever the guy's name is. Hey, what are you up to right now? Hey, weird man, I'm actually with my aunt, flew across the country to see her.
Uh-huh.
We're having family time. What's up? Well, I just wanted to know if you wanted to hang out sometime. Something like that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, I was just at a family function, and you were there with my dad. Like, you nasty, not that he's nasty, he's actually just an insecure old man, but, you know. I was just nice to the guy, and you could tell, like, nobody's ever nice to him or something, and he took that and took it and ran with it, Sam.
I see.
Isn't that gross?
I don't know. Depends.
Like, if your daughter was at your home, and you guys were having a family function, and you had some family friends there, and one of the guys that's your age hit on your daughter, how would you feel?
Yeah, I would be very pissed.
Yeah, wouldn't that be gross?
Yeah.
It'd be, like, weird. It'd be like, it's just something you don't do.
Yeah.
Even if the guy, like...
But then I wouldn't see anything wrong if she brought a friend, and I made a move at her, right?
Oh, hold on. Back up. Wait a second. How's this going?
If I made a move on my daughter's friend, that wouldn't be so weird, would it?
That'd be disgusting.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you like younger... First of all, you're married. So it's not going to happen. But second of all, if you're single, you like younger women, you still wouldn't go within your daughter's circle of friends. It's disrespectful
people
to your daughter.
People have done that, though.
Yeah, but they're trash.
Right.
But, you know, you wouldn't do that, right? Because you have respect for your daughter.
No, I wouldn't do that.
No, because it's just nasty. If you like younger women, that's your thing.
Yeah.
And if they liked you back, let's say they did, you wouldn't... You wouldn't go fishing in your daughter's pond, right?
Probably not.
Hell no.
Unless
not if
she had a really hot friend.
If you wanted to see your daughter again, you wouldn't do that, right? Right?
I don't know. It happens. It happens. But no, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't do that, right?
No, I'm just kidding.
And if a man that likes younger
women...
If a man that likes... A guy friend of yours that likes younger women, if he were to date younger women, he wouldn't be asking your daughter out. You'd deck him, right? You'd fucking just pop him, right?
Yeah.
I would. I don't even have kids. I'd be jackhammering to the jaw. I'd be doing some jabberwocky moves. I'd be like, boom. Just wouldn't happen. It's just such a no-go.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, even my brother's younger than me.
Uh-huh.
He's only like 2 years younger than me, or a year and a half. And his guy friends sometimes are flirty or whatever. And it's just more, but they love to do it to piss Matthew off.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt gets pissed. And I'm like, my brother still tries to beat me up.
Really?
And we're like adults, so it looks like domestic violence. I'm like, Matthew, you can't do this because we're adults now. It looks wrong, and it hurts, by the way. You're like 500 pounds bigger than I am, and you're packing a mean punch. You can't play around punching me anymore. It's actually illegal. I could actually press charges now. You know?
Yeah.
And he's just like...
Did he used to beat you up all the time?
No, I used to beat him up until he grew up.
Uh-huh.
And he kept growing. I mean, I used to be able to like sit on him and pound him, you know, mm-hmm. and he's like 6'1", and he's hefty.
Really?
So he's got a lot of power in that punch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You don't want to mess with
no,
him.
No, I don't. But I mean, I'll still have to stand my ground because he's not going to punk his sister. I'm not going to get punked. I'll freaking knee him in the nuts. I don't care. I'll bite him. I'll still scratch him. I used to get in trouble for scratching him and draw blood. I'll do what I need to do, Sam, is what I'm saying. I'll freaking pinch his ass, bite him, you know, make fun of him. I'll make fun of him in front of his friends if I need to you know, get at him. But, you know, his friends will try to kind of, you know, hit on me or whatever, and Matthew gets so protective. It's the weirdest thing. I'm like,
now what would happen if it was the reverse? What if you were hot for a friend of your dad's or something? Would you make a move?
That's just so gross. But I just, the kind of, my dad's a great guy, but you know, he's from this small town in Texas.
Right.
Guys at that age, I mean, a 50-year-old or like a 45-year-old or a 40-year-old in LA looks extremely different than a guy in a small town backwoods in Texas.
Right.
Two different. They look like 100 years apart.
Right.
I dated a guy that's 20 years older than me, and he had a six-pack, abs, he was tan, he was good shape.
Right.
He looked distinguished. He didn't look like crunchy old.
Right.
He didn't look like a crunchy, crusty old man. He looked he looked attractive, you know, he looked distinguished. Mm-hmm. Whereas the same guy, you take him and put him in a small town in Texas, 9 times out of 10, he's gonna have a beer gut because that's all they do is drink beer. You know, yeah. And he's going to be like talking about the glory days when he played football, and he's going to have a goatee that just clearly defines his chins. Mm-hmm. So he'll have like a goatee, but he'll have like 5 other chins popped out underneath it. Nasty. So I can't even imagine being attracted to a friend of my dad's because they're like crunchy.
Right.
Yeah. They're crusty and crunchy.
Right. But I meant more with the age thing. I mean, you know.
I can't even imagine, though.
In LA.
If my dad had LA hot, you know, 45-year-old friends, yeah, mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah.
And then I would be like, it couldn't be like my dad's best friend. It would have to be like an associate.
Right. So you see, so it works for you, but it doesn't work the
No,
other
because
way.
I wouldn't do that. If they were close friends of my dad, I wouldn't.
Right, yeah.
Like, if they're close, no, that's just weird.
Yeah.
That's weird.
But you never know, you know? I mean, that's the thing. When you're attracted to someone, there's no, like, rationalism in there, you know?
Well, you can kind of realize, like, is this just a phase of attraction, or is this, like, something, oh, there's something really there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there like something really there and you try to suppress it, but you can't suppress it and it keeps coming back and it's just, maybe we need to explore this because there's something deep there. Is that really what it is, or is it just a little phase, a little attraction?
Yeah. Who knows?
And
you
never know. 9 times out of 10, it's probably just the wind's blowing a certain way and you're like,
yeah,
oh.
Well,
there's a lot of people out there. That's what I don't understand about the celebrity world and mm-hmm. how these celebutants, a lot of them date the same guys. And it's like, man, there's a lot of men out there. Mm-hmm. Why are you guys all trading up the same boyfriend?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, go after a different market of men.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard, though, that like they feel safe. They like dating people that other people have dated, and it's like they keep that world kind of incestuous and
small.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, we come for money, they come for money, and we're kind of the same kind of group. We're all like, you know, kids of actors or singers, so let's just date each other's boyfriends and like be really – it's like high school never stopped.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Hmm.
I'm like, go date a nice entrepreneur or something. You know?
Yeah.
Go date somebody else somewhere else.
Yeah.
They all like trading
up. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right, Kira, this is another show in the can. And
okay, crazy man.
All right, and thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.